This is episode number 792 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about a new charity for comic book store owners, Hasbro suing DC over Bumblebee, and the Connecticut Horror Fest, which is coming up on the 16th of September. Our comics this week will be Croak number 1, Superman number 29, and Ash versus Army of Darkness number 2. And this week's Creator Spotlight is a return guest. Randy Hoyt of Foxtrot Games recently joined me again to talk about his company's newest game, Spy Club, which is hitting Kickstarter on September 20th.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
Good, clean, wholesome fun.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well today, and I forgot to mention as we record this, today is my parents' something anniversary.
Happy something anniversary, Matthew's parents.
Yeah, they got married. And then a week later, the Cuban Missile Crisis happened. Or a couple of weeks later.
Hey, in happier news than the Cuban Missile Crisis, we recently got to share a panel with them. Because they came to see us at our podcasting panel at Terrificon, which I think we mentioned on the show, but that was a surreal and very nice experience.
It was a lot of fun because my parents have never, you know, my dad was a big comic book guy, so my first time ever going to comic book shows was with him, but my mother never went. And my mother really liked to see, wanted to see what I do. And so her and my dad were there. They saw me sell a book, which they attributed to the fact that it was them, that they were the good luck. Then they went out and won $800 gambling.
Which was amazing.
Which, yeah, so maybe they were absolutely right.
But and you and I, neither one of us being gamblers.
Nope.
That's unfathomable to me.
No, we gamble on fun.
That's right.
And we always win.
That's right. We always take the sure bet, Matthew.
Yep.
So let's talk about some of our news this week. Over on ICV2, this is a story that was posted by Nicole Bungie. Three comic store owners have announced the formation of a new charity to help struggling brick-and-mortar comic stores stay in business.
Wow.
I thought you, as a former comic book store owner, Matthew, would appreciate this. The idea has been in the works for a while, but in the wake of Hurricane Harvey, the group chose to go public this week. We talked about it for a long time, Dr. Christina Blank, the organization secretary and owner of All Yeah Comics in Muncie, Indiana, told ICV2. Then Texas happened. The Helping Comic Retailers with Issues charity, that's what it's called, HCR Issues Charity, launched this week because the group's treasurer, Jen King, owner of Space Cadets Collection, Space Cadets Collection in Oak Ridge, North Texas, is located in the middle of the area hit hard by Harvey. Her own store is fine, but there is other stores that are affected by that. The disaster is hitting so close to home, galvanized the group into action. There is the Hero Initiative, the CBLDF, but nothing specifically for store owners having a hard time, Blank said. The founding members have witnessed multiple stores, large and small, go out of business over the last year. Comic shops are vital to the growth of this industry and are important in the communities where they exist. HCR Issues hopes to help alleviate stores' financial strain by paying down debt to Diamond Comic Distributors, Blank told ICV2. When retailers are in need, they can request a confidential form from Diamond, which will not be shared outside of HCR Issues. The group is set up to begin taking donations, either monetary or items to auction, immediately. HCR Issues is the brainchild of Blank, King, and Dennis Barger Jr., owner of Quick Stop Comic Shop in Lincoln Park, Michigan, who serves as the executive director. HCR Issues is an LLC company pending 501c3 approval. So what do you think about that, Matthew?
I really like that idea. I think that when you have a bunch of stores kind of rallying to help each other, that's huge. And All Yeah Comics is Franco and Baltazar. That's theirs. So if you think about it, if it hurts everybody, if a store like we are really weirdly fortunate where we have three comic book stores within a 10 to 15 mile radius of each other.
We are super fortunate.
It is really odd that that goes on and happens because if you, decide, like, say you're in where we live in Springfield, Mass. If you drive down 91, you'll hit three stores right away, but then you won't hit anything until you go down to Rocky Hill, Connecticut, where there's a store. So that's a 25-30 mile drop. Then there's not much on the other side of it. So we are very fortunate, but when a community or an area loses a comic store, that really affects the industry. That affects everything, because you now either have to go look or you just give up or you go online. And it's tough because we need those. We need the places that sell the stuff that we are so passionate about.
And what I thought was interesting about this, and I wanted to get your thoughts on, is that specifically it seems like they are aimed at helping pay down debt owed to Diamond.
That was the big thing, because when you said that, it was like, okay, that makes complete sense.
Because that seems to be what forces a lot of stores to go out of business, right? Yeah, is they get in over their head.
Diamond will float you for a few months here and there.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't pay my bill. Well, you know what? Get us next time, or you start doing the payment thing. I remember being involved with a store that all of a sudden they turned around and their debt was out of control, where they never would have ever been able to pay it off.
Right.
And that's the other thing is, hey, guess what? We're going to shut you off of your books. Well, guess what? Now I will never be able to pay you back.
Right.
So it's a huge thing, and that's the right way to do it. Instead of saying, well, we'll pay your rent.
Right, or just send you money, period. Because
we'll pay your diamond bill.
This is – because that seems to be the lifeline, right, for a lot of these places. So, yeah, I thought that was very interesting. And in relation to Hurricane Harvey, there are – a lot of different places that you could go and donate. I'll put a link in the show notes to the funding campaign that J.J. Watt of the Houston Texans set up. His campaign, as of the time that we record this, might be over $15 million,
holy
but it was
crap.
On its way to $15 million. And it is amazing. Like a bunch of celebrities have now donated to it. But his the thing about when you donate to some of the charities is you're not always sure if it's going directly to – the area that you want to help. Like if you donate to Red Cross, it could go to Red Cross as a whole, not necessarily specifically to victims of Harvey. But with what J.J. Watt is doing, my understanding is with his charity, is he's making sure that stuff is specifically going to the people that are hit hardest by Harvey. And so I will put a link to that. But of course, there are plenty of other places that you can go and donate if you want to help out. You can donate to the SPCA if you want to help out the animals that have been stranded. So yeah, we haven't talked a ton about the different charities that are associated with that, but this sort of coming out of that, this charitable movement, reminded me that I was just reading about the J.J. Watt one this morning. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes if people want to get involved and they haven't had a chance to yet. That is one good way to do that.
My niece lives in Houston and was sending us pictures of her – just the destruction of her house.
It's unfortunately unfathomable.
And – the things, I mean, some of the pictures that you're seeing out of there, of all the racial issues that we're having right now in this country, it broke my heart to see a picture of these three little white kids in a raft being pulled by these two black guys. And it's like, why is this not the stuff that people are seeing everywhere? This is what our country is all about. And then you have Mexico, who we have, not necessarily us, but our administration has pooped on, insulted, and said every negative thing. The country of Mexico has pledged money and support to help out Houston.
Right.
What does that tell you?
Well, I think what it tells you is that no matter whether you like this administration, hate this administration, you know, we don't talk a lot about politics here, but it's the people that make up this country that have the choices to individually act in these situations. And when this situation was happening, what you see, if you're paying attention enough, is you see the helpers.
Yep.
And there was a I think it's a quote from Mr. Rogers now that I think about it, but I and I'll try to find it, but he basically was saying that his mom used to always tell him that whenever something really terrible happens, look for the helpers. Because there's always people who want to help that will go into a situation. And I think that quote started circulating around after 9/11.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's the same thing. Like you see, there are stories of the traffic going down into that area of all these people who have boats that are coming down to help. There's videos that, you know, are being passed around social media of people who are basically making their way down there and helping out in any way that they can and rescuing people and things like that. And so when something like this happens, like those are the stories that should be being highlighted yep. more is the fact that there are tremendously good-hearted people who band together in a situation like this and help one another.
And there are more of
and it,
more
it kind of reminds them. Us that, you know, as we get caught up in the daily rhetoric on social media and things like that, we can make change on an individual yep. level. We can have a positive impact on an individual level despite the message that might being sent from the current administration that yep. we have right now. So that stuff is very heartening to see. And so there are a lot of ways yep. for you to get involved and to donate. It's great to see that this organization has popped up, not just, you know, unfortunately it's popping up around a tragedy that's happening, but the long-term impact of this effort could be really, really positive. So there you go with that. And then there is a story coming out of the Hollywood Reporter this week that is saying that Hasbro is suing DC over Bumblebee.
Oh, no.
And it says, anyone confused that Bumblebee is both the name of a Transformers character and a DC Comics superhero? Hasbro apparently believes there's room for confusion as it has brought a trademark lawsuit against DC Comics and Warner Brothers. The complaint filed in New York federal court asserts that the defendants have begun using Bumblebee in connection with a line of superhero girls action toys.
Bumblebee has been a character since the 70s.
Right. Defendants and their licensees are using the exact mark that is the subject of Hasbro's Bumblebee trademark registration for goods that are identical or closely similar to the goods listed therein or the goods covered by Hasbro's related common law trademark rights, including toy action figures, toy vehicles, and building block construction sets, states the complaint. Bumblebee, as a superhero character, first appeared in the Teen Titans comic book in 1976, yes. while Transformers came along sometime in the 80s. Of course, the lawsuit deals with the origins of merchandise. Then again, it essentially implies that a consumer looking for a toy robot will wind up with a Bumblebee figurine from DC.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that will never happen.
So that's a lawsuit that's being filed right now, which is kind of ridiculous.
It is so silly when you hear things like that because – I mean, why don't we just go after Bumblebee Tuna? Because you know what? I was in the store and I went to
buy
a Bumblebee girl.
I was looking for Transformers. I ended up with a sandwich. I'm not sure how that happened. Yep. I was confused.
Yep. But boy, I am going to sue you. I mean, one's a Volkswagen, right? Isn't it a yellow Volkswagen? Isn't that a Bumblebee? One is a little, small girl superhero.
I went to get an action figure. I came home with a jar of honey. I don't know how that happened. Those things are very confusing to me.
I got stung by a bee.
Yes.
All right. I thought that was a Transformer.
Right. Well, all of a sudden, there's all these bees outside.
I went to go hug a nest.
I thought they were action figures.
Yep. Went to go hug a nest. That wasn't a Transformer.
Then I had to go get a shot.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Okay. Well, in more positive news, especially if you're a horror fan, I have a show coming up on the 16th of September. As you listen to this, it is going to be the 8th, I think, of September. So in 8 days, I am going to be at the Danbury Arena in Danbury, Connecticut, for Connecticut Horror Fest 2017. Of course, our friends at horrornews.net are the ones that are putting this show on. And Christine has come on the show before. Her and her husband, Rob, and their awesome crew over there put on a great one-day horror convention every year. And I am super excited to be going this year because, in addition to how awesome the show usually is, two people that I have never met before that I am absolutely dying to meet are going to be there. And I am very excited about the possibilities. First of all, Adrian Barbeau.
Oh.
From Swamp Thing, from Creepshow, and from one of my favorite movies of all time, The Fog by John Carpenter. She is going to be there. And from Maud.
Maud and Back to School.
Yeah. So, and Back to School as well. Yes, she is going to be there. And I am extremely excited to meet her.
We were looking for silverware. What, under her dress?
Also, one of my favorite actors of all time, Tom Atkins from Escape from New York, from Halloween 3, and from the aforementioned The Fog, and also one of my top 10 all-time 80s horror movies, Night of the Creeps.
Nice.
Where he played a character, Matthew, called Ray Campbell. Now, in the book that I wrote with my friend Jolene Haley called Harrowed, it is the first in the Woodsview Murder series. It's sort of like a Scream sort of YA book that we did. You can get it on Amazon now. I will put a link to that in the show notes. There is a character in that book, a detective by the name of Ray Atkins. And that detective is inspired by the character that Tom Atkins played in Night of the Creeps. So if you've seen Night of the Creeps, then you will immediately know the character that I'm talking about. He was the inspiration for this character that we wrote into our book. Now, for my birthday, Jolene actually got me 2 print proofs of this book. It's not available in print. It's only available digitally. But she had 2 print proofs made and sent them to me. I gave one of them to our friend Gary at Music Outlet. Yep. Because there is a music store in that book that is inspired directly by Music Outlet with an owner by the name of Gary that is inspired directly by Gary. I gave him one of the 2 print copies that I have of that book. The other print copy I will be delivering to Mr. Tom Atkins at Connecticut Horror Fest if all goes well. And I just can't wait to tell him that I am such a huge fan of his work, and that clearly enough so that I essentially made him a character in one of my books. So I am super, super excited about that. So you can go to cthorrorfest.com. I will put a link to it in the show notes. That, again, is happening in Danbury, Connecticut on the 16th of September, and that is a great show. I will also have, if all goes well with the Postal Service, I will have copies of a brand new novella in my Parted Veil horror series that is a sequel to the very first book in that series. I will have print copies of that with me debuting at that show. So I am super, super excited about that. And then, of course, we have BingCon coming up. You will definitely be at New York Comic Con again this year, correct? I am not sure what is happening with that yet, but one of us will be at New York Comic Con for sure. So we've got comic shows coming up as well. And speaking of comics, Matthew, let's talk about comics this week, because when we were at Terrificon 2017, which just wrapped up a couple weeks ago, I was walking around Artist Alley on that Sunday, which was really my first opportunity to walk around Artist Alley. And I remember telling you that I walked by a booth that had some Alterna comics for sale. And if you remember, the Alterna comics are the ones that are printed on newsprint, and they go for a cover price of $1.50.
Love it.
And I was very, very excited about that. And I met a guy by the name of Cody Andrew Souza, who is the creator and writer of a series called Croak. And so I didn't know who that was when I went by the booth. I had seen Croak online, and I had seen it talked about on Twitter. And I was like, man, I really want to grab that book. And then I'm walking by the booth, and I'm like, oh, wow, cool. You guys have that issue. He's like, yep, that's my book. I was like, holy crap, how are you doing? So we ended up having a good conversation. And so I really like what Alterna Comics is doing. I was actually on their website the other day, and they have an Etsy shop where you can buy a month's worth of releases at a time that come in like a bundle of 4 books or a bundle of 5 books. And I'm actually going to be ordering some of those because it's like $6
yeah,
for the bundle.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing that too.
So, and they will send them to you directly. But again, these are printed on newsprint. So they are the old school comics of yore that they are doing here. And Croak is a series that might as well be an 80s horror movie, which, again, speaks to my soul. Mm-hmm. You know how that goes. We start off with a group of 3 friends who are traveling a road up to the mountains as the sun is setting. And it feels very much like Evil Dead when you first start. Because if you remember that first shot from Evil Dead is when they're coming up the winding road to the cabin and stuff like that. And you see these 3 friends, they're talking about going camping and how a couple of them are not fans of camping, but their friend kind of dragged them out here and they're going to go out, and they park at their parking spot, and they got a station wagon. They're unloading all of their stuff, and they're talking about their 4th friend who basically wasn't able to make it. And so these guys are going to go camping anyways, and they're going to go out here. And Colin is the guy's name that wasn't going to make it. And so as they're driving out there, they're like, well, we're still going to have a good time. You know, we'll make a campfire, we'll set up and stuff like that. And so they go out in the woods and they set up their camping spot after hiking a pretty good ways in, far enough that they're sort of not really near their car anymore. They're kind of in the middle of the wilderness there. And, you know, the guy who's leading the pack, they're like, are we there yet? And he's looking for a particular spot. And so it takes him a while to get out there, but they finally do, and they finally set up camp. And it's not long after they set up camp that, of course, what do you do, Matthew, when you set up the campfire and you're all sitting around while you're camping in the middle of the night?
You tell ghost stories.
You tell scary stories, right? So, of course, you have one of the 3 that's saying, you guys know about the legend of this place, right? Because there's always a legend, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, the legend of the woods. These woods? Yeah. He's like, you know, let me tell you the legend. He says, so basically years ago, when I was a kid, my dad told me and my sister this really messed up story. I think he said his uncle told it to him or something. But essentially what happened was that back in the day, this group of friends decided to camp out here in the woods. They decided it'd be fun to spend the night out here under the stars. Unbeknownst to them, one of their friends was planning to kill them all.
Oh, boy.
And so, you know, one by one, as it got dark, they got lured out into the middle of the woods, and he basically beat the crap out of them. And as he's telling the story, his friends are like, no, this, you're full of crap. There's no way. And he's telling the story, but then they start kind of hearing things out in the woods. And so they're sort of toggling between not believing his story, but also getting a little bit creeped out, as you do when you're telling the scary ghost stories in the woods, until one of their friends hears the young woman hears this like big croaking noise out in the woods. And she's like, what the heck was that? And they're like, she's like, you guys didn't hear that. No, I didn't hear that. And all of a sudden her name is Aubrey. She takes off into the woods to find out what the heck it was. And as she starts running in the woods, she's getting more and more freaked out. And all of the sudden something reaches out and grabs her in the woods. And it knocks her to the ground, and as soon as she falls down and this thing is kind of looming over her, her hand finds a rock, and she picks up the rock and she smashes this thing in the face. And it's like some hooded figure that is sort of standing over her, and she smacks it in the head like three or four times. And all of a sudden she becomes aware of the fact that her friends are yelling at her, and she kind of stops and drops the rock and like, Aubrey, what did you do? And she looks down, and it's their fourth friend, Colin, that wasn't supposed to be on the camping trip, that was dressed up in a costume that tried to scare her in the woods. And she's basically bashed this guy's head halfway in, so she doesn't even know if he's alive. And as they're screaming at her saying, oh my God, what did you do to Colin? The camera sort of pans back into the woods, and you see that the thing that was making the croaking noise is this bird-like creature that is actually out in the woods. So now you have these three friends where one of them is severely into these four friends where one is severely injured, and there is an actual monster lurking out in the woods. And that's how the first issue of this ends. So what I liked about this story is that the twist there is that it was one of, they were just trying to play a joke on her. They were trying to get him out into the woods, scare them, and have, you know, a couple of the kids run off in the woods and get scared by one of their friends. They did not factor on the fact that Aubrey was going to pick up a rock and fight back and basically brain this guy. And so now they're in real trouble because they're in the middle of the nowhere. They're even further in the woods, and there is an actual monster lurking out there. So very cool first issue of Croak. This one came out, I want to say, in May or June, and the second issue has already come out as well, but I will put a link to the Alterna Comics website in our show notes so that if you want to go and get this book, you can actually get this in a bundle. Lilith Dark was the other title that I picked up, and I talked about that in the last episode. You can grab them in bundles by month. So you can get like the first issue of the series, and like every other month, the next issue will come out and stuff like that. So definitely worth checking out, and I am really liking these Alterna Comics and now want to pick up all of the titles that they put out so far.
I wished I went over there and saw them, because I would be doing that. I mean, I would love to get very entertaining comics at a great price. I don't care what kind of print they're on. I just want to read and have fun.
Well, I mean, it proves the theory, right? And I hope, I haven't read any articles about like how they're doing as a company, like if this is working, if this is successful for them, but I hope that it is, because when I see a $1.50 cover price on a brand new comic, I don't even care what it is.
Yeah.
I'm buying it.
Yeah. Where are they out of? Do you know?
Let's see if it says. It lists all of the different
stores that have them.
That are retails of them. But I don't see if it says where they are out of, because I want to say, and I'll have to learn more about them. I want to say that it's like an image sort of situation.
Okay.
Like if you put your book through them, you end up earning, and Cody told me how much it was, but it was really good for creators.
So they get a great royalty rate.
He might have said 80%.
Oh, wow.
I'll double check that, but it was really good from a creator standpoint, because most places, like if you think of like Amazon or something like that, I think you earn like 65%, which is, you know, again, when someone else is doing all the printing and all the heavy lifting, like that's not terrible. But if it is closer to 80%, like that's really good. Even 70% is good.
Yeah, that's really good. So we're going to be talking about a character that we just spoke about a little bit earlier, and that is Superman. Now, there was a time when we were always complaining that Superman needs to be the flagship title of DC. Yes, Batman is more popular, but Superman has got to be up there because he is DC. As far as I'm concerned,
right.
He is DC. And the series that has been going on since Rebirth started, 29 issues, all 29 have been amazing.
This is another series, as I mentioned with Batman, where I am like 6 issues behind. I have them all. I just haven't read them all yet.
I have been in love with this series. Now, Action Comics to me has been very hit or miss, but the Superman proper has just been amazing. You, like myself, love the fact that it is very family oriented. It is Lois. It is Superman. It is
Jonathan. I do like that about this series.
So this one's called A Minute Longer, written by Keith Champagne, and Doug Monk is doing the art. Jamie Mendoza, Scott Hanna, and Rob Hunter all do the inks on this one. Rob Lee does the letters. And we start out with Superman scouring the city, and he's looking around, and you're seeing some bad things are happening, sadly, with children, because a bunch of children have gone missing. And if you know me at all, that is sort of a...
It pulls on the old heartstrings.
Yeah, that and the fact that when I see things like that, like all these movies about kids being kidnapped, don't even ask me because I will stay so far away from it. So as I read this, you see all these families and they're all talking about their kids are missing and they're saying, Superman, what are you going to do about it? And he goes, you've got to understand, I have been doing everything I can. I've been looking everywhere. The authorities are looking everywhere and we don't know what is going on. And you've got these families that are giving Superman a really hard time. And you can imagine, I mean, I've never had family. Well, I take that back. We've had friends that have lost a child that was missing and then ended up coming back not with us anymore. But the frustration, the horror, the wondering, everything right here is boiling up in Superman's face. And I think that Keith did a really good job writing this one and kind of bringing that home, where people weren't just like, oh, it's Superman, you know, you're fine, everything's good.
Right. Because
it's not. No matter what, you're still going to be terrified. Jimmy Olsen shows up, starts snapping pictures and saying, you know, I want this to be out in print. I want people to see how upset you guys are, how hurt you are, because this will get people looking. This will get the sympathy going that you guys need. And they're like, so... you know, what are you going to do right now then? Are you going to go out there and look? And he goes, look, I'm going to go out and I will find these kids. I will bring your kids home. You have my word on that. Now, usually when that happens, you always get nervous because that's where something bad's going to happen.
Well, those are like, yeah, that's the dangerous promise, right?
I will do the best I can.
Right.
That's about what it should be. So next scene, you have this little girl sitting there, or she's laying in bed, and all of a sudden she hears somebody behind her, and she gets up. And she goes, who are you? If you don't leave, I'm going to scream. And he goes, oh, I hope you do scream because, you know, your parents aren't even going to hear you anyway. And the little girl's like grabbing her pillow going, go ahead, you're scaring me. And he's like, that's the point. That's what I want to do, Lily. And then you see that she is missing. Now, Superman all of a sudden finds footprints, little kid footprints in the thing that seem to be very odd because it's like late at night. And he's like, these footprints are brand new. They shouldn't be here, but then he loses them. And as he is flying and the lightning is going on, you see in the lightning it says fear. So as Superman flies away, you have the boy who has now taken this little girl and they're walking down the street. Superman finds him and lands and says, what are you guys out here doing? Parents are terrified about their kids right now and you're out here and it's really late. And then he realizes that the boy he's talking to is Zachariah Ferrucci, who was the first kid to go missing. And then Superman sees, he's talking to him saying, you know what, whatever has happened to you guys, you're safe now. I'm going to get you to your parents. I'm here to help. And then the boy looks at him and goes, but what if I don't want help? Blasts Superman through a wall. And then Superman's looking at him going, and now the interesting thing too, is that every time the Zachary kid talks, it's in yellow, where it's a yellow word balloon.
It's like a disembodied.
Yes.
There's something going on.
It's not him talking. Yeah. So Superman comes out of the rubble that he just got pushed in and says, I pretty much am assuming that you're being possessed by somebody, and blows his cold breath on him and freezes him. And then as he turns around, he sees that Zachariah is behind him. And now the little girl is attacking him with that yellow word balloon voice. And he's like, stop, let me help you. And the little girl goes, love, hope, compassion. You have to let it in. But whatever you do, you've got to let in the fear. So now you're seeing yellow and fear. You're thinking,
could be Yellow Lantern.
This could be Sinestro. I'm getting a little freaked out about this one right now. And then he says, so Superman, why don't you come play with me and be one of us? And then they all disappear. And then Superman wakes up with a policeman going, what's going on? Are you all right? And he's like, I see the family and I see the kids. So we need to let the families know these kids are alive. Something's going on, but they're alive. He starts to follow a trace, goes into this building that is just dilapidated. And this voice is still talking to him in yellow saying, I can sense the terror building up in you, Superman. It's so sweet. It's so delicious. And then when you open the door, you see that the kid has got all these other little kids in like this web thing. And they're like, Superman, help us. Superman, please. And he's like, I love this. I love the fear. And he goes, don't forget Superman first and foremost. And you see the boy starts to change his shape. And he goes, I am fear. And then Superman looks at him and goes, Parallax.
Oh.
So we haven't seen Parallax in a little while.
No, we haven't.
And so Superman's like, what are you doing here, Parallax? Why are you after these kids? And he's like, because I want the fear. And these kids are terrified. And that's what's feeding me. And that's what I'm living on. And one of them grabs a hold of the Parallax tentacle Superman's neck and starts choking him. And as Parallax is starting to kill him, and then Superman makes him release him. And then he's like, all right, well, guess what? I'm just going to have to take care of a couple of these kids because I'm hungry. Superman starts freaking out, saying, you do not want to do that. You've got to understand me. You've got to let him go. And you see Parallax just kind of staring at him. And then all of a sudden, Parallax goes into Superman. And then Superman now is Parallax. And Parallax is like, oh, this is great. This is exactly
what I
wanted.
Which is pretty scary because when you think about Parallax inside of Hal Jordan, and now you think about Parallax inside of Superman.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Superman is now there with the Parallax uniform on, the yellow power ring, and then all of a sudden something smacks him from behind. And, of course, you're thinking it's going to be Green Lantern.
Right.
And you turn the page and it's Sinestro. And Sinestro was basically – he says, you have something that belongs to me, Superman. And that's how that issue ends. And then, you know, of course, when you see the cover, you kind of realize something's going on. But
Superman versus Sinestro, pretty awesome.
What a freaking amazing story. So yep. If you're not reading Superman, then shame on you.
All right. Well, we're going to go over Dynamite to wrap up our new books for today, Matthew, and talk about Ash versus the Army of Darkness number 2. Now, if you remember the last time around, Ash had been – this was after he got fired from S-Mart.
Yep.
He basically had someone come visit him from a local high school that was explaining that something weird – is going on at this high school, and you seem to be someone that's familiar with this whole Necronomicon thing. I think there's something weird going on at our school. Can you come check it out? And so he is coming to the school. I don't know if it's as an assistant principal or as like a – I think it's a substitute teacher that he's coming at. But basically, in the first episode, science class ran amok, and we saw that the school is somehow being affected by the Necronomicon. And in this issue, we sort of pick up in the wake of the – sort of event that happened in the last issue where you have the custodian who is looking at the hallway that is covered in blood after this monster basically came out of the science class. And he's like, I don't believe this. He's like, this is the worst mess I've seen in 35 years as the custodian. And he's mopping everything up and he's bringing this trash bag that has scalpels in it and everything over to the dumpster. And he ends up cutting himself by accident. And when he puts the bag in the dumpster, you see that there is a page of the Necronomicon that is in the dumpster. So we're starting to see here that it looks like, I think we have a bird in the room.
There is a squirrel running around. I'm looking in the window.
Oh, there we go.
There's a squirrel in there.
Well, hopefully the squirrel doesn't get near the Necronomicon, Matthew, because what happens is as soon as the blood hits a page of the Necronomicon, the dumpster becomes possessed and it attacks this custodian. And next thing you know, there's fountains of blood going all over the place. And so what we're seeing, I think, is that the pages of the Necronomicon have been scattered around this school, and the school itself is starting to become possessed. So you have Ash, who is the students of the class that Ash was teaching are now in the assistant principal's office, and she's the one that recruited Ash. And they're saying, look, I don't know what the heck's going on around here, but there's freaking monsters running around, and she's trying to kind of gloss over it. I know it seems weird right now. I'll take care of this. You know, you'll have to trust me. What you saw earlier was nothing more than a prank that was gone wrong. Everything's cool. And just as she finally starts to convince them that things are okay Ash kicks open the door and he's like, we got to get out of here or we're all going to die. And she's like, oh, great. And he comes in and he's talking about how we need some weapons here. He's like, something's going on at this school. The walls, the floors, the whole building is starting to turn on us. I can't even get the windows open. We have to find weapons. Do you have a bat or a fire axe or anything? And she's like, no, why would I have weapons in the school? And he's like, oh, that's great. Well, if we're going to survive, I need to get a few things out of my car then. They go out in the hallway and they notice that all the trophy cases from around the school are now huddled in the hallway as they go out. And sure enough, the little baseball player on the trophy jumps off and starts swinging a bat at one of the kids. So all the little statues on the trophies come off, and it's very much like Army of Darkness.
Very Sam Raimi.
Very yep. Sam Raimi, where you've got a kid who has like 15 different trophy figureheads on him that are hitting him with bats and hockey sticks and everything like that. The rest of the kids take off. Ash is trying to save this guy before he gets a javelin in his eye from one of the trophy things. The jock comes and kicks one of the statues into the wastebasket, and they run into the sort of open area of the school to get up to the next floor. And all of a sudden, it looks like one of those paintings where the staircases are on the floors yep. and everything. So now what's happening is the whole school itself is starting to morph around them. And they don't even know what's going to happen when they go through a particular door. And as they're trying to get their bearings, the custodian, who we saw in the very beginning of this issue, shows up, and he is now a deadite. And he is fighting against Ash. He's battling him back and forth. The kids are trying to get from one room to another. Desks are flying everywhere. The furniture, much like in Evil Dead 2, has turned against them. Chairs are flying at them and everything. And so the entire school, the skeleton from science class, of course, starts to come to life. So they're battling all of this stuff. And finally, Ash is able to get to his car. And just when the kids that he was trying to protect are going to be completely destroyed by this custodian run amok, he shows up and he's got his chainsaw back and he's got his boomstick back, and he quickly takes care of this deadite. And as they are about to figure out where they can go to stop this, all of a sudden a bunch of men in black kick the windows open and start firing weapons everywhere and coming down, rappelling down ropes. And they're saying this area is officially under quarantine by order of the Supernatural Military Adjacent Response Team, or the SMART team.
SMART
or
team.
The SMART team.
Love it.
And that's the way this issue ends. And so this storyline has been super fun from the get-go. It is written by Chris Sims and Chad Bowers. The art by Mauro Vargas has been great. Very sort of over-the-top cartoonish. Colors by Triona Farrell. Letters by Tom Napolitano. Edited by Anthony Marquez. And the cover by Brent Scuvener is a Breakfast Club
oh, nice.
Homage cover, which nice. I'm showing to you, Matthew, right now. Maybe I'll use that as the show notes, as the art for this particular episode, is great as well. So these are the types of Army of Darkness stories that I like
yep.
from from Dynamite, rather. Just these, like, put them in a situation, have it be a self-contained story, let it rip, have fun with it, and that's exactly what this one is. So very, very cool stuff. If you haven't checked out this most recent series, I want to say it's like a 4 or 5 issue series. Definitely worth checking yep. out. So there you go. That is your new books for this week. Now we are going to end with a creator spotlight. And not too long ago, we had Randy Hoyt of Foxtrot Games come on to the show with our friend Alana Abbott. And they talked about a game called The Fox in the Forest, which was sort of a card game that was had its own mythology that Alana helped contribute to. Well, Randy has a new game that's going to be hitting Kickstarter on September 20th, and it is called Spy Club. And just from the looks of it, it has a very Scooby-Doo, Nancy Drew kind of vibe to it. It is a cooperative game with set collection, light storytelling, and double-sided cards that introduce a memory element to them. This is going to be a Kickstarter project starting on the 20th, and Randy recently came on the show to talk to me about that. So he is your creator spotlight for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. Now, for our next episode, you're going to want to do your Judge Dredd homework. You're going to want to read the rest of The Complete Case Files, Volume 1, because we're going to be finishing that up. So until next time, for Matthew, this is Brian signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
Alrighty, and this is Brian here, and I am joined once again by Randy Hoyt of Foxtrot Games. How are you tonight, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for coming back on the show. A lot has happened since the last time we chatted, even though it wasn't that long ago, because you and Alana had come on the show recently to talk about the launch of The Fox in the Forest, which is now out, and as we were talking about off the air before we recorded, is doing very well. So since the last time people heard from you, how was the launch of The Fox in the Forest?
Yeah, The Fox in the Forest came out, I guess, mid-July. And reception was great. Reviewers loved it. Gamers have loved it. We sold through our first print run in just under a month, which was great. We've got a reprint coming. You can still find it in stores, Amazon, you know, all those places. They still have it, but we've sold out through distribution already.
So obviously that must have been hugely gratifying because, as we talked about during the interview, so much love and craftsmanship went into the whole world of that game and really wanting to create something very special. And so to see the response, not only from the people who backed it early to begin with, but once it came out in that initial print run, must have been very gratifying.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a weird game. It's two players only. It kind of draws on classic trick-taking elements. And so, you know, I was a little nervous. I wasn't sure how it would be received. We love the game and our playtesters had loved the game. But yeah, to get, you know, copies in reviewers' hands and just have people loving it and tweeting it, posting it on Facebook and taking pictures of Jennifer's amazing art on Instagram. It's been quite a month.
Yeah, and the artwork for that game is absolutely stunning. And so if people have not checked out the links in the show notes from the last episode that we did, I will put the links to the game back in this episode's show notes so you can go check that out and you can get in on the upcoming print order of the game. So when do you think that you'll have that back in print for people who might be now just hearing about it?
Well, like I said, it's still in stores and you can find it on Amazon until they sell out. But it should be next month, I think, October sometime.
Well, we're actually gathered here this evening to talk about the new game, which you have been just demoing at Gen Con. That was the other big thing that happened since the last time we talked. You have been demoing the upcoming game from Foxtrot, which is called Spy Club. So I am super excited about this one because looking at it just from afar, it made me think of Encyclopedia Brown. It made me think of Clue. It made me think of Scooby-Doo. It made me think of Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, all of which were not only just childhood loves of mine, but still to this day I hold very dear. So tell us a little bit about Spy Club.
Yeah, all those are the right vibes. Encyclopedia Brown, Harriet the Spy, those are the ones I usually reference. So in the game, it's a cooperative game for 2 to 4 players. You're working together to solve neighborhood mysteries. Every clue card in the game represents one aspect of a case, like the crime itself, the suspect, the motive, the object, the location. So you're trying to collect sets of cards, 5 of each type, so that you can then solve one of the aspects of the case. And as you do, a story starts to emerge. You know, so if you figure out the suspect is the neighbor, and then you figure out that the location is the ice cream shop, and then the crime is theft, you start to kind of put these pieces together, and it really encourages storytelling among the players, like, hey, what did she steal from the ice cream shop and what was she doing there? That kind of vibe.
I think what really excites me about this game is just that it's the storytelling piece of it. And obviously the imagery that it evokes. Like I have up on my bookshelf right now, and I bought for my kids on eBay years ago, some old Encyclopedia Brown books. And I, you know, my daughter has the Nancy Drew graphic novels and the hardcovers. My son has read Hardy Boys. I was such a huge fan of kid detectives that between those sorts of things and Choose Your Own Adventure, like, and growing up as a huge fan of D&D, like all of those things seem to be kind of at play in this game.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would add is it is a mechanical, like, Euro-y type game. There are action points you get to take, and you're manipulating your cards and passing them around. So it's not a role-playing game or anything in that. The storytelling is a light aspect of it. But as you are performing these actions and working together as a team, that story does emerge as kind of a byproduct of the mechanics or the actions that you're taking.
So how did the sort of genesis of this project come together? Like, was this something that you sort of had always been kicking around as, you know, an idea on your sort of whiteboard as you're going through the ones that you've already put out? Or was this something that was more recently inspired?
Well, the idea of having a mystery-themed world for Foxtrot Games has been around since the beginning. I loved Clue as a kid for sure. And I thought that I would love to have my own line of my own Clue-like universe for sure. That's definitely been around. This particular game, it started, I was working with a graphic designer on one of our other projects. This is World's Fair 1893. And when we were wrapping that up for production, somebody put out a contest on a game design contest, and it was a meta game. So you needed to name the game after a mechanic. So you could call it like Area Control, the Area Control game, or something like that. And so I love the set collection mechanic in games where you're trying to collect complete sets of things. And so I thought it'd be fun to have a game called Set Collection, the Set Collection game. And being with my background in folklore and mythology, I immediately thought of the ancient god from Egypt, Set, the god of chaos. So I was talking with the graphic designer about this, and he's also a game designer. And so he took that idea. I was too busy getting all the files ready for production and things. But he quickly designed a set collection, the set collection game, and shared it with me. And I thought it was really cool. But the theme didn't quite fit it. It wasn't nowhere near as heavy as a game about the god of destruction and chaos should be. And he went away, and he came back later, not too much longer, with this kid detective theme put on. And It was stunningly, it was jarringly different, but I was like, wow, that fits it really well. And so we worked together after that, he and I, to develop it into the full-fledged game that it is today. I think he knew I liked detective stuff for sure, and he's been wanting to make a game about young kids in a neighborhood for a while. And so this seemed like a good fit once we kind of matched those mechanics with the theme. The game changed a lot after that, but that was the core genesis of the idea.
That is such a cool just sort of concept to me, because like, in whatever sort of creative endeavors that you're involved in, there's this sort of underlying theme of like every idea has its time, right? And that you always sort of have this stew of ideas that have come from different things, whether it's for mechanics, whether it's for character elements, whether it's for story elements or whatever, that's always sort of just sort of marinating. And then it's kind of interesting how different projects will pull pieces of those things together, even though they were never maybe initially even thought of in that way. And I love that part of the process, how it sort of organically comes together. And it sounds like that was the case here.
Yeah, I mean, all creative work is sort of the sum of all of your previous experiences and ideas you might have tried but didn't fit at that time until, you know, like you said, they marinate and then later they find the right idea to be wedded to or the right person to collaborate with. All of that stuff we just draw on as creatives.
Well, and you have had a chance to actually put this game out in front of people, because at Gen Con recently, you were demoing the version of the game that's going to be going up on Kickstarter soon. And how did that go? I mean, that's kind of scary, right? Putting that out in front of people for the first time.
Well, we've been playtesting it, I suppose, for a long time. We actually had it in the first exposure playtest hall at Gen Con a year ago, but it was definitely in a much rougher state than this. Whenever you sit down with people and put something you've created in front of them, it is scary. You know, you get attached to things. You love the product, but you also love the time and the work and the memories that you have. And it can be really hard to separate those out as a creator. You're like, well, I love this, but is that just because it's got so much of my blood, sweat, and tears in it?
Right.
So at Gen Con, we were running scheduled demos for, I think it was 12 hours in the main event hall. We ran demos and 8 hours in the first exposure playtest hall this year. And it was just so much fun. I mean, people really love the game. They were really getting into the storytelling aspect. With Spy Club, it actually has a campaign mode. So there's a bit of a renaissance in the mechanical side of board games into story. Things like legacy games, things like Time Stories, and some of these other campaign games that are coming out that let you carry a story across multiple play sessions instead of just playing the game and putting it back in the box unchanged. It sort of remembers through different ways, like a score pad or stickers or other ways. The game remembers from game to game what's happened, so you can get this bigger evolving story. And Spy Club has that as well. You can play five games together to sort of build this master case. It's as if there are five small – each game is a smaller crime that's leading up to this big master crime that you're trying to prevent from happening. And we had one group beforehand volunteered to play an entire campaign at Gen Con. So we sat with them for 4.5 hours while they played through five different games. And they just had such a great time. And it was so rewarding. You know, you sit there and you're thinking, they've paid money to be at this convention. Right. They could be shopping in the vendor hall. They could be learning published games, but they volunteered their time to play test this game because it sounded so cool. And it's quite nerve-wracking. But yeah, they really loved it, and it was just so rewarding. I had a couple of other people who have been developing sort of that campaign content, the extra stuff that you unlock as you go. And just getting to see all three of us there with this group of people playing a whole campaign, it was really great.
Yeah, that sounds like a really special sort of coming together of that stuff. And I love the idea of the smaller cases leading up to the big case. Now, did I read it correctly on the website? Is that called the Mosaic system that you've put together for that?
Yeah, there's a few different formats right now that people are experimenting with. Legacy is probably the one people have heard the most. It has games that, from game to game, you're destroying components, you're stickering the board, you're altering it in sort of permanent ways, and you play a much bigger, I guess, grander arc. And so we wanted a way just to distinguish it in the marketplace. And so, yeah, we've called it the Mosaic format. The idea is that the game comes with a number of modules. It's got over 40 different modules that you can unlock. These are new cards that give you characters or challenges, equipment, all these things that sort of add to your story, new rules, new story elements. But in a campaign, in a given campaign of Spy Club with only five games, you're going to unlock five of those modules. And those modules can all be unlocked in unpredictable orders. There's no predefined script to the campaign. So we think of it, each module is like a little piece of a mosaic, and they can all be interchanged and mixed and matched. But at the end, whichever five you unlock in your campaign are going to make a unique, mosaic that's unique to you. It'll be your own special version of the campaign that you unlocked. And then the great thing, you can put those five back in and play again, maybe get all five new ones or maybe one of the same. But as you play again and again and again, you can continue this campaign experience with new groups. You can teach it to new players. You can keep playing with your regular game group. But each time, a different story will emerge from the choices that you've made.
And you can also just play one case or one sort of round of the game, and that in and of itself, those smaller stories are standalone as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so obviously, you know, we're talking about this game that's been out and you've been demoing it and you've been playtesting it, but we're about to see the Kickstarter campaign go up for this, which starts on the 20th, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. September 20th, we'll be putting it up on Kickstarter for about 3 weeks.
And as far as like rewards and things like that, I mean, I know we talked about this a little bit with The Fox in the Forest, but you guys sort of have a sort of a standard approach that you take to the game now, right? As far as what people can expect from the Kickstarter and how does that kind of play out?
Yeah, I mean, what we're doing with Spy Club is we will just have a sort of a no-frills campaign. You can get the base game with free shipping for $39 in the U.S. There'll be an international shipping pledge level as well. And it won't have stretch goals. We've sort of pre-stretched everything. We've got it, you know, where we want it. The fear with stretch goals is that people will wait until it gets to be sort of good enough to back. And you know, we've just taken the approach that, you know, we've got some extra money because our last projects have been successful. We're going to go ahead and upgrade the cards. We're going to upgrade a number of the components. And with this particular game, we're going to add in, you know, 40 plus extra pieces, extra modules of content. And, you know, if we were going to try to roll those out, the whole system only works if you've got them all. So to like roll out a small expansion here, small expansion there, you know, we're delivering a full product just right from day one to encourage people to get on board right at the beginning, not to wait until the game gets upgraded and to just be a part of the Spy Club story from day one.
Which I think is awesome, because the other thing I see sometimes with stretch goals is that, you know, a lot of times those are things that haven't even been developed yet. And so you then are in a situation where the game is not really fully done by the time the Kickstarter is over, because there's stretch goals that now have to be fulfilled and new content that has to be created. So to have, you know, the product sort of ready to go and fully, fully put together inspires a lot of confidence, because Kickstarter is a place where things don't always end up, you know, coming out the way that you want them to, or in some cases coming out at all. So the fact that you guys continue to have a proven track record of delivering, you know, fully formed quality products with your Kickstarters, I think that can inspire a lot of confidence for people to jump in right away, like you said, and not wait.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the challenges with this one is that all those modules are secret, that we won't discover them as you're playing. They're supposed to be, there's definitely moments of surprise throughout. And so we don't have a full list of all the cards for you to look at. And so we're really hoping that we can, you know, lean back on the past successes, the proven track record, to get people to, you know, just to trust us that, you know, we've done games before. We've got a good track record, award-winning games, and we really want people to have that surprise when they get it. So it'll be a little bit of a challenge. I'll be curious to see how it goes. If people decide to wait until the game gets out and more people are talking about it, I mean, I understand, because the surprise aspect of this is a little tricky. But yeah, I'm hoping that our track record will be able to say something, and we'll be able to inspire confidence for people.
Well, I think if they go back to your website and they look at any of the products that you've put out so far, or they go back and listen to the interview we did about The Fox in the Forest, I mean, I think they will see that. I think you guys have built up that amount of trust. And so I think the Kickstarter is going to be super successful. And we certainly hope that it is, too. And we'll have links to that in the show notes. And in the meantime, before the Kickstarter goes up, where's the best place for people to not only check out your other games, but also to follow with, you know, maybe what you guys are doing right now and into the future?
Yeah, so you can always go to foxtrotgames.com or check us out on Twitter and Facebook at Foxtrot Games. For Spy Club in particular, you can go to spyclubgame.com. That'll redirect either to a landing page right now where you can sign up to get notified, or once the campaign is live, that'll redirect straight to the Kickstarter campaign.
Well, Randy, I really appreciate you taking time coming out of Gen Con and getting ready to start up this Kickstarter. I mean, I'm sure it's been the summer must have flown by as you've been sort of getting prepared for this. But I appreciate you coming back on the show to talk about this game, because this, I feel like, even for our listeners who maybe aren't board game enthusiasts, or maybe or don't consider themselves to be big gamers, like, I know that a ton of our audience grew up with Clue and grew up with Encyclopedia Brown and all of, you know, Harriet the Spy and the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew. And so I think there's going to be a lot of interest from our listeners as well about this product, because it speaks to us on that level. And I know I'm extremely excited about it. So again, thanks for your time, and I hope you have a ton of success with this project.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's always good to chat with you.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.